Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by legendary head coach of the Denver Pioneers, Bill Tierney, who was recently elected the IMLCA president. The IMLCA is the Men's Collegiate Lacrosse Coaches Association. They're hosting their annual convention virtually this week, and this was the big news coming out of the weekend from a business development standpoint for the IMLCA. So, Coach Tierney, thank you for joining us. How do you describe the way that this week has unfolded? Kind of a time unlike any other in the history of this association.
I'll tell you, Terry, it's been amazing, and people have been planning this since the summer, and so much credit goes to our director of operations, Damali Mara Gallagher, who helped Dale Reppert, who was phenomenal in putting this all together and making it go so flawlessly from meetings to presentations to discussion groups to Blackboard sessions. I think there's a lot of people who think maybe it was better because now you can rewind those talks and listen to them over again. And just I'm so proud of all those people, and obviously J.B. Clark and what he's done with this group to lead to this convention has been really amazing.
You mentioned J.B. Clark. He's been the president of the association since taking over for founder and emeritus Richie Mead. And I will remember and characterize his tenure as being about democratizing the association. So the creation of so many different committees and the involvement of dozens of coaches across each of these dozens of committees and increasing the visibility of the association to its members, roughly 1,000 members, by getting more than 100 coaches involved in a real and in many instances granular way, is a super important legacy. And developing the association to the point where he can hand over leadership to you and set your sights on the horizon. So, realizing that the convention has been the hallmark of the association and everything that it's provided from the standpoint of camaraderie, but also from the standpoint of professional development, and maybe you lose a little bit on the camaraderie side because of the inability to be together in one hotel for a weekend, but you make up for it because of the efficiency and, like you said, the quality execution of all of the sessions and business meetings and the fact that so much has gone on since the season was canceled in March. What do you think about when you think about the future of the association?
Well, first of all, you know, this thing started with Richie Mead's vision, 15 years ago or so, and continued on through J.B. Clark. And when I think of Richie, I think of vision. When I think of J.B., I just think of all those things that you just mentioned, which are, I couldn't have listed them all, and there's more to come. And so his leadership has been phenomenal. He's got a unique way of kind of getting people to get involved without badgering anybody and letting everybody know that each one of them is important in their own right, and that we want to hear everybody's opinion and try to come up with solutions to problems that can at least make everybody understand that we are a group that's there for them. And I'm so proud of JB for that. And then certainly for the future, but there's a couple of things that I would like to do. I'd like to be able to bring my experience. We've got a lot of young coaches in our group now. I think historical reference is something that's really important. And, there's no more history. And when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about length of years involved in this game than I. And so not quality all the time, but certainly length of time. And so my job is to just continue this amazing journey. One of the things I want to take on is I've been able to, over this past summer, do a lot of talks, a lot of podcasts and things like that, and Zoom presentations. And one of the things that I always talked about is that coaching is the top of the totem pole. Every business, everything you go through in life has a coach, has a leader, has a teacher. And so if people can learn how to coach, they can learn how to be managers of business and things like that. So that's, so number one, I want to help enhance that, especially for the young coaches. Number two, continue this journey with the assistant coaches. You know, Mark Van Arsdale and some of those guys have done an amazing job of continuing some discussions that were started 5 or 6 years ago, and the assistant coaches have done really well. Ryan Wellner and Sean Nadel, and this J.L. Reppert has been the leader of all of that action. And then certainly finally is getting coaches to understand that we get so excited about all these 18-year-olds that we're recruiting, and sometimes we forget that as great as these kids are, and they might help us win games and things like that, is that the fellow coaches are going to be around for much longer than that 16, 17, 18-year-old. And so getting coaches on board with treating each other with respect and treating each other great. I think the pandemic has given us so many great opportunities to learn more about diversity, learn more about the history of our game, learn more about people treating each other better, learn more about X's and O's, because we've had all these opportunities. And so we're all going to look back on 2020 and say, you know, how crummy it was. But if we look back on this thing and say we did gain a lot from it, then I think the future of this organization can continue to be on the rise. And oh, by the way, J.B. Clark's not going anywhere. He's going to become the executive director. So, we'll continue to have him at our side.
I think that is definitely an important lesson for listeners of this to be aware of, that the, and I say this from experience in terms of the conversations that I've had with certain committee chairs and folks that are leading other initiatives within the IMLCA, the success of the convention being conducted virtually is not the only example of the work that's been done since the season was shut down. That is some silver lining of the season having been shut down. This is work that wouldn't have likely occurred if the calendar had unfolded normally. To the answer that you just laid out, one of the things that I love about it is it really shines a spotlight on what the reason for existence of the Coaches Association is, right? It's to look after its members. It's to make the job of being a college coach better and more secure, and to make coaches be more professional in their jobs. But that's only one side of the coin as I see it. I also see the Coaches Association particularly pertinent within lacrosse, where, you know, there isn't necessarily the presence of an Olympic movement or the presence of an overly dominant sports league like the NBA or NFL interfacing with the NCAA in order to influence the direction of the sport. There's also the big picture topics that the Coaches Association can influence in a way that, if they don't, there really isn't another entity that is invested in trying to influence the direction of the sport. How do you think about some of those big picture things that are facing lacrosse and that the IMLCA in conjunction with the IWLCA can move forward, such as, say, you know, just within the last 3 or 4 years, the curtailing of early recruiting?
Yeah, it's a great question, Terry, and it touches on so many topics, and that's why we need so many good people like we have to help us deal with those. From Matt St. Laurent leading the inclusion group to, you know, all these different groups that are under the auspices of this umbrella group right now. It's we're able to start to do that, but I do think that there are things in our game. But it all goes back to people treating people correctly. And if you think about that, any of those topics that you might talk about, people understanding that we have Division III schools, we have club programs, we have Division I programs, they've all got to be taken into account. We've been in conjunction with the women on certain things, like you just said. And we need to continue to do that, but we need to also continue to help the growth of men's lacrosse in a world right now where, you know, lacrosse is, between the money making of basketball being necessary for the survival of the NCAA and football breaking off from the NCAA, probably. We need to step up for ourselves and make sure that people understand that men's lacrosse has great value, from what it means to collegiate institutions to what it means to the health and welfare of young men, and all the way to the health and welfare of the game of college sports in its entirety. And we're members of groups that are doing that right now. But because there's going to be a change after this pandemic settles down, there will be change. There will be budget cuts. There will be thoughts about how do we maintain the viability of a sport like lacrosse in colleges. And for us, the other side of it kind of is, how do we continue to grow in a way that makes college administrators look at our sport and say, this is valuable. This is important to us to have this sport. Then you talk about world lacrosse. You talk about Olympics. You talk about the different games. You talk about the value of box lacrosse in our world to help field lacrosse and vice versa. We don't want to just be the Collegiate Lacrosse Coaches Association. We want to be the Lacrosse Coaches Association. And so that's going to mean some expansion, some talk. How do we help these youth coaches? And we're going to use the technology that we gained through this summer to enhance that. We're going to use our relationship with the PLL, the MLL, the NLL to help us be a major part of what they do, and to have them help us continue to be the great sport that we are. So there's so many topics, there's so many things to talk about, and certainly as I said earlier, the reason I'm in this position is probably for historical reference, and I think that the energy and the insightfulness of all these young people for the good of the game are things that I'm not gonna try to, cast my thoughts on all this. I'm gonna work with them and just try to be that gentle hand that leads them in the right direction.
So there's a lot there that I'd love to react to, but in terms of being respectful of your time, there's another important question that I need to get to. So we're going to shift from kind of having our eyes up to having our eyes down. And one of the elements of this weekend every year is there's divisional breakout meetings, conference meetings, and in a typical year, you're talking about issues a year down the road. Obviously, this is not a typical year, and so my expectation is that while there probably still is a tremendous amount of unknown, there were probably some conversations that started to give us a better sense of what the spring of 2021 might look like. How do you characterize the conversations that occurred over the last week around the spring of 2021 season?
Well, I'll repeat what my athletic director, Carlton Creech, said back in March, is that hope for everything and expect nothing, and we're still in that mode. We pray for a January 30th game against Utah here at Denver. We hope for, a March games against North Carolina and Duke. We probably realistically looking at a Big East schedule, in mid to late March into April, and we will have an NCAA tournament. Right now, there's all these conferences are meeting currently. The Big East is meeting today and trying to come up with schedules that can be flexible, like we've seen in basketball and football, can be meaningful so that the kids have as good a senior year or good of year as it could possibly have, unlike last year, and one that yet still makes sense because 3,000 people died yesterday, of COVID. And so we have to be mindful of all these things. We have to understand that anything we plan in December could be switched around in a second. And I think the lacrosse world, just like the football basketball world, is going to be disappointed at times. There are going to be games canceled. Is going to be excited at times because teams will will all of a sudden be playing someone else that they weren't scheduled to play. But certainly, I think the key is to be hopeful that as time goes on, that everybody gets back to school in a way that kids can get a great education, that people can get back to the field in a healthy and safe way, and that at the end of this thing, the young men that that have come back for a fifth year, the young men that are now freshmen that are looking in front of them with four classes instead of three classes, all those people can look back on 2020 and say it was painful, it was hard, but it was certainly worth the effort. There are some things coming out from some conferences, but they seem to all be rumors or what if or it could change type scenarios, and nothing dramatic or nothing concrete has come from any one of the Division I conferences. We just don't want teams and schools dropping lacrosse programs from Division I, II, III, club, NAIA, or whatever it might be.
Flexible, meaningful, and mindful are great words to be thinking about, kind of a mantra in this moment. So with that, Coach Tierney, we'll let you get back to your day. We really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations on your nomination and election as the president of the IMLCA. Best of luck as you continue to get your stewardship of the organization underway, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with IL Editor-in-Chief Matt Kinnear. And Matt, before we jump into the topic of the day, which is what does the spring look like now? It's a topic that we've already discussed. We also have to discuss a topic that we've already discussed, which is Fanatics. Fanatics is the official shop for the National Lacrosse League fan gear. Whoever you root for, wherever you live, you can find all of your gear on Fanatics. Show your team pride all day, every day with certified National Lacrosse League apparel, including hoodies, shirts, half-zip sweatshirts. Those are my favorite, by the way. You cannot have too many half-zip sweatshirts. Long sleeves, hats, scarves, and, of course, jerseys. I, as I've already said, decided to indulge in a purple hoodie and a purple t-shirt to support the San Diego Seals, and I've been rocking that recently. And I know that you have partaken as well.
Absolutely. I'm a Wings guy. I just... show my Philly pride, even though I'm not even from Philly. I'm just kind of adopted by that city. So Wings, and it's funny because we're still working from home most days. So normally I'm like a polo with the small logo guy, but it's hoodie season basically for Matt Kinnear now. It's just hoodie and sweatpants. So that's what I'm rocking.
Whether you're getting ready for the 2021 NLL season or shopping for the holidays, Fanatics ships fan gear right to your door. Fanatics is the only place to buy official National Lacrosse League fan gear. Do what we did and get yours in time for the upcoming season. Save 25% when you use promo code IL20 at shopnll.com/IL20. That's shopnll.com/IL20, promo code 20 to get 25% off. One more time, shopnll.com/IL20, promo code IL20. So Matt, there's some recent news that's breaking, and I think that one of the things that we can give the majority of this kind of credit or attention to is the function of the IMLCA and IWLCA conventions being held virtually this past week, and that brought a lot of coaches together. It meant that there was a lot of conversation around planning for the 2021 season, and probably the biggest news to emerge so far is that Big Ten women's lacrosse coaches informed their prospective non-conference opponents that they will not be able to play in the 2021 season, during the regular season at least, suggesting that the Big Ten will play a conference-only schedule in 2021. Pretty big news for a variety of reasons. Probably the biggest reason is because it's pretty much the most definitive thing that has emerged on this front so far. Last week, we did see the Atlantic Sun issue its conference schedule, but it didn't necessarily say that there weren't going to be opportunities for non-conference games among the ASUN members. And so, that was kind of more, this is the schedule that we're looking at, as opposed to this is going to eliminate the opportunity to do something. What's your reaction to this news that the Big Ten women's coaches are notifying prospective non-conference opponents that they won't be able to play this spring?
you know, I've heard people say, you know, well, we've got time, but there's not really the luxury of time anymore. You know, the decisions are going to have to start being made at least, you know, when you're looking at the schedule. You know, I was thinking this the other day. Normally around this time, Terry, we've been talking about, like, when's ESPN going to release this TV schedule? When are they going to get this TV schedule out to us? Now we're kind of at the point where, like, all right, when is any team going to release any sort of schedule? So, like, we're getting to the new year. You know, if under normal circumstances, you get to the new year, you're only 4 weeks away from starting your first game. So things have to be decided. Obviously, everything will still be in flux, but at least initial plans have to start being made and at least being put down on paper in pencil, if not pen right now.
So that's interesting, because one of the things that I was thinking about earlier this week is, when are we going to get something definitive around the initial practice date was targeted for January 6th. It's being postponed until at least February 1st or something like that. On top of what we have already heard from the Ivy League, which was that they won't look at practice prior to March 1st. But, you know, for those traditional early starters like Delaware and Bucknell and Maryland, the types of teams that have practiced on January 2nd, 3rd, and 4th in prior years, you know, when are we going to start hearing, all right, well, we've got like a tentative return to school as of January 16th, and we're going to look at potentially starting practice on the backside of that. That, to me, might end up being the first kind of widespread decision that we end up hearing about, is when some of the early practicing teams end up saying, we aren't going to be practicing until later.
And Terry, one thing is, you know, we're kind of in a bit of a quagmire with the winter sports right now. You know, the basketball, there's obviously, you know, I'm a Maryland alum, and I think three of their first four games were postponed because of, you know, the opposing teams having some sort of COVID tests. There, you can see why there maybe isn't a lot of attention being paid to spring with kind of the situation that is right now with the fall and winter. And, you know, I feel like there's prevailing wisdom that there's going to be everything that can be possibly done for the spring athletes will be done because they've already lost a season. But, you know, right now it's kind of like you kind of deal with what's ahead of you. And if your basketball team is trying to get in its games and it's not happening and you need to make decisions on that, you know, maybe that's why, maybe when there's more clarity on how the rest of the basketball season will go, if there is, maybe that's when we'll have to, you know, get some more attention to lacrosse in the spring.
I also wonder how much the vaccine distribution, and particularly the way in which the speed matches the expectations, influences where students end up falling, college students in general, not the student athletes, where college students end up falling in general on the priority list, how that ends up influencing the decision process. Because one of the things that builds on, I think, the point that I made, which was in reaction to the point that you made, which was it's getting late fast. I wonder if one of the reasons that in the minds of some college athletic administrators, it's not getting late fast is because what defines quote unquote early on a traditional calendar is not going to be the normal time this year, right? Like, so that's kind of what I'm saying is that, well, it's not necessarily getting that late for talking about game schedules if practice isn't going to start until February 15th or practice isn't going to start until March 1st. And then the season is going to be 8 or 10 games and we're going to pack those into 6 or 8 weeks between April and May. And I think that, you know, that's the type of way that we need to be thinking about this. But what's interesting is for some, there's a desire to have more certainty than that. And when I say some, I could mean college coaches, I could mean conference administrators, whatever the case may be. And so I think that's where you're starting to see some of the decisions that are being made, they feel a little preemptive. Right. So these preemptive decisions are the desire to try to have certainty. And for an institution like the Big Ten, it makes sense, right? Like they know what they can control and they have a broader track record of what they've already done in comparison to some, say, Division II or Division III conferences that haven't had any sports in the fall whatsoever. And they have a sense for what their priorities are. So they're, you know, they can know what they're comfortable with in terms of if this is the minimum that we get done in the spring, it is sufficient for us. And I think that's why you've seen that type of decision come first, and then some of the other entities, whether it be the smaller Division I conferences or Division II or III, fall behind it. But defining the beginning of the season is only part of the story. We also have a little bit greater clarity around the definition of the end of the season, at least at the Division II and Division III levels. So can you share what you know when it comes to that?
Yeah, and this is pretty significant stuff. You know, obviously there's still so many questions about, you know, structurally what the season will be in terms of who you're playing. Are you playing conference opponents? Are you playing a fairly typical schedule? Are you playing a regional schedule, et cetera? But the, you know, no matter what you do, the end of year is going to be different. And in Division II, it's going to move from 12 teams down to 10. That's Division II men's.
It, you're referring to the NCAA tournament.
The NCAA tournament. The women's NCAA tournament for Division II is going to go from 16 to 12. Now, mind you, you know, this was these tournaments were a lot smaller just a few years ago. But this is the area of lacrosse that, you know, you could argue you're seeing the most growth. In terms of the college level, you know, you're seeing a lot of institutions in the South, you know, kind of that, you know, that Southern, that Midwest kind of south of Ohio tier, you know, you're seeing a lot of schools there that are adding at this Division II level. So it's pretty significant because that's been an area where, you know, the access to the tournament has been such a factor in, you know, the new programs that are coming into Division II lacrosse. You know, you have the ability to start a program, be ranked in the top 10, and be going to the NCAA tournament, you know, within the span of 2 years. Like, that's a legitimate thing that you can do in Division II lacrosse. So that's really significant that, you know, that is getting, you know, that 10 doesn't seem like such a small number, but, you know, for the sport, it is, you know, significant to not have those two teams in the tournament. The Division III tournament, this is a little bit.
Well, hold on. I want to build on. I just want to add one point there, yeah. Which is the majority of the tournaments that were reduced in size were reduced by 25% for Division II men, as you point out, and like the Division II women's tournament. The Division II men's tournament was reduced by 17%. And the reason for that is because, despite the fact that, as you pointed out, 6 years ago maybe, the Division II tournament was only four teams. Despite its substantially rapid growth, it's tripled in size in, like I said, roughly 6 years. Despite that, it still is comparatively small. The percentage of teams that make the NCAA tournament as a total of the number of teams that play Division II men's lacrosse is still pretty small. That's why that number wasn't reduced more greatly from 12 to, say, 8. So that was an argument that was effectively lobbied by Division II coaches in order to kind of salvage two of those spots, like you mentioned.
Right. And it's a bigger division than NCAA Division I men's lacrosse. And it's a smaller tournament. So if you look at it just that way, you know, percentage wise, it's small for in comparison to some other sports in terms of how many teams get in the postseason. But, you know, like I said, because the number of new teams, it has still provided a good pathway for teams to, if you make the investment and you get good quick, you can be in the NCAA tournament, you know, within a few years. Division III, it's really interesting. So, you know, from what I've learned, and this is from coaches who have been at the IMLCA convention, and you've talked to Coach
Phil Tierney
virtually at the IMLCA convention. They've been on Zoom calls talking about all this stuff and learning some, you know, continued education with their coaching at the IMLCA convention and getting some business done. So from what I've learned from those guys, that the Division III men's NCAA tournament is going to be 28 teams. So it was 36 last year. So that's a significant scaling back. There are 27 automatic qualifiers. So that's going to leave just one at-large bid for the Division III men's lacrosse tournament. I don't have these similar numbers for the women's, but I do think it's fair to say that, you know, given 25% was kind of a target, you know, you can kind of look in that range in terms of how much the tournament is going to be scaled back for the women's Division III tournament. So this, you know, 27 AQs, 28 spots, so only one at large. It is unclear right now whether that's a Pool B or a Pool C bid that will be the at large.
And what does that distinction mean?
I knew that was going to be your next question. So The Pool B, it's easy to get these confused. So the Pool B is for a team that's either an independent or a team that doesn't, that is not a part of a conference that has an AQ. And I'll give a recent example that is really influential and important. The 2019 national champion Cabrini was a Pool B bid because at the time they had just transitioned into the Atlantic East Conference. And that was a new conference, so they had that kind of two-year probationary interim period with the NCAA. So they did not have a conference that earned an AQ. That conference, to my knowledge, will earn an AQ going forward because they've kind of passed that two-year mark. But so Cabrini was that Pool B bid and went to the national championship. The Pool C bids are the ones that you typically see kind of the bracket selection Sunday discussion about. You know, the Pool B bid, it's usually pretty much, you know, who you expect it's going to be. Cabrini was definitely going to get it that year. You know, I know like Whittier has been a team that's gotten that in past years. So the Pool C bids are like the ones like how many NESCAC teams are going to get in, how many teams from the Liberty League are going to get in, how many ODAC teams are going to get in. So basically the best teams that did not win their conference tournament. So you're looking at a situation where like the NESCAC, which has so many teams, you know, five teams that are legitimate NCAA tournament teams, you know, they're one, maybe two. The CAC, which has now been rebranded as the Coast to Coast Conference, you know, that's had a lot of kind of defectors out of it, York kind of being the main one there. You know, they've gone and joined the MAC. But the CAC, you know, that's going to be one of those things where Christopher Newport's going to be really good this year. Salisbury is returning pretty much everyone. You know, if Christopher Newport knocks them off, does that mean Salisbury is not getting in the NCAA tournament? You know, the Liberty League, you got teams like RIT, Ithaca, St. Lawrence. You know, ODAC is going to be really good with Lynchburg and Hampden, Sydney. So there's going to be some really, really good teams that are left out of the conference tournament. And one thing to note here, Terry, the NESCAC, Amherst has their one-year postseason ban this year.
Right, right.
Because of, you know, the departure of Coach Thompson and the situation up there. So maybe it's a good year to have that postseason ban if you're Amherst. But so this is significant stuff. But I will say that this, Terry, that the coaches that I've talked to, it says, well, we're not really expecting there's going to be 27 AQ conferences. So the prevailing thought, at least among coaches, and I'm not sure if this jives with what administrators are thinking, but that there will be conferences that say they are not participating in spring sports. There will be teams that, you know, some teams have and some teams aren't. So maybe they don't have enough teams to participate
that
in terms of winning an AQ.
Right.
The conference doesn't have enough teams. So we could see that at-large number increase a little bit. But either way, it's still not a very big number. And it's still going to be a real battle. And, you know, you're getting those situations where you're going to have a great team that has one loss in the conference championship not be in the tournament.
Well, I mean, it's something like college football fans can appreciate. It's the similar idea there, right? Like your conference championship game is a de facto play-in, and it's not an ideal scenario on the basis of a normal year, but on the other hand, it's not a normal year. So I'm sure that if you were to put it to every college lacrosse player to say, you can choose either to certainly have a season, but you're only going to play for an AQ to the NCAA tournament, or you might or might not have a season. I'm pretty certain that every college lacrosse player would take that former guarantee on the basis of the experience of having lost their season this past year.
Absolutely. And also if you've moved mountains and deferred a job and added a second major or all of these things to get to this point, I think you're going to be, I'm not saying you're going to be happy with what you get, but you're going to accept what you get if that means you're just going to play only ODAC teams in the spring or whatever it is. And, you know, it's going to make every game really fun and really exciting, particularly those, you know, teams that are number one and number two in the conference when they have their meeting. That's going to be just a freaking battle.
So you've mentioned the ODAC a couple times. They were one of the early Division II and Division III conferences to lay out a return to play plan. Theirs included fall and winter sports playing in the spring as well. It was pretty broad, and in my opinion, given at least when it was rolled out in mid-November, quite comprehensive. That being said, by and large, still not a ton of certainty at the Division II or Division III level. Also not a ton of certainty at the Division I level with respect to what the spring is going to look like, but should have added a couple other comments when we were talking about this communication from the Big Ten women, which included that a couple Big Ten men's coaches said that they had not been told what the women's coaches had been told, which was that they were only allowed to play conference games. That being the case, it should be said that that's yet, right? It could develop that way depending on how the situation proceeds. It just hadn't occurred yet. And then in addition to that, you had followed some news on the baseball front that suggested that the Big Ten had, at least on the baseball side, plans for a couple of weeks to only play a conference schedule as well. Whether or not that ends up being the case for, say, the ACC, which for men's lacrosse is the only other big conference, in women's lacrosse, the Pac-12, which might end up kind of falling that way for a couple other reasons, not only the burden of travel, but also one of the things that applies to Division I, II, and III men and women is that, you know, the overriding policies for these, even more so than conferences, are going to be state and CDC or state and university guidelines. And particularly when you talk about the Pac-12, because the state of California has been one of the more stringent, and you've seen this in any number of instances in sports, including most recently the San Francisco 49ers relocating from Santa Clara County to Phoenix, Arizona. Certainly when it comes to the women's lacrosse Pac-12 teams, there's going to be meaningful restrictions that are going to have to be navigated. But the point that I'm getting at is that as you move into the mid-major and smaller conferences in Division I, the intel that I have gotten is that the majority of them are still in wait and see mode. And I think the majority of the wait and see is waiting for the NCAA to provide more updated socialization measures, return to socialization measures as the season approaches. And I think that's the posture that the majority of Division I conferences and subsequently teams are currently taking right now.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and I'm not, and like, I'm saying this more of like my speculation. So I don't want anyone to like, I want to make that clear just because I'm, you know, we're talking about stuff that we're reporting as news, but also just kind of speculating here. It feels though that like, I don't know, doesn't feel to you that like some sort of like conference plus nothing or very limited other is going to be the norm across the board next year? Dude, that's my opinion. And that's kind of what I'm thinking. So I'm thinking it's going to be either conference only across the board or conference plus one or two other games that are extremely convenient and, you know, whether local or teams that are similar profile that match the same testing standards. But that seems to me like everyone is kind of – that's what we're going to have. It just hasn't kind of been codified quite yet.
I agree. I think that process of elimination is going to dictate that, but I also think that the NCAA tournament, I mean, we just spent however long talking about how the likely path to the NCAA tournament is going to be the automatic qualifier from your conference tournament. It's going to increase the incentive and necessity among conference members to play one another for conference tournament seeding. And so I think that that's where the emphasis is going to be. Not only that, but also, I mean, typically teams are in conferences for reasons. It's because the quality of competition among teams is fair and equitable and less than it used to be, but certainly more than most it's not. The geographic component of things is a motivating factor as well. So, yeah, I do think so. I mean, there will be exceptions, geographic outliers like Utah, which is an independent, obviously, and Denver, I think, are going to be teams that are incentivized to play outside of their conference. And so, you know, those are the types of things where I could see a couple of, as you call them, you know, one-off games so as to round out the schedule, provide a little bit better student experience, and also try to sharpen your story competitively as well as possible before you get into the kind of most important moments of the season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, obviously, like, Terry, we were talking before we hit record about, like, you know, just this conversation, and you even led kind of tongue-in-cheek, like, we're talking again about return to play. You know, it is funny that, like, you know, there aren't a lot of decisions that have been made. I think that's important to just, like, kind of reiterate that, like, you know, the Big Ten women's emails and you know, them kind of talking to their coaches about not being able to play those out-of-conference games is really the first, or one of the first things that is, like, pretty concrete and solid and definitive about the 2021 season. So it's just important to note that, like, you know, this is, we're going to be talking about this for several weeks, and we'll have a little nugget here, a little nugget here, but there's just not a lot definitive right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's a good place to leave it as we head into the weekend. I don't know what the holiday season is going to hold in terms of news. My expectation is that this is going to be the type of thing that, starting January 4th, you're going to see slow incremental build in terms of concrete, actionable news. And like everybody has said, including Bill Tierney earlier in this podcast, you know, finding something that is flexible, meaningful, but, you know, also mindful of the situation is going to be the priority. And part of that flexibility is agility and speed of adapting when situations arise. And at Inside Lacrosse, we're going to do our best to make sure that you're aware of them. It's going to be daunting, or it is daunting, to think about how quickly some of this material is, and some of this news is going to develop. But we're going to do our best in order to stay on the front foot and continue to bring the most updated information.
Terry, speaking of which, do you want to go over our picks from what we've done this week and kind of what we're looking at going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, the piece of content on InsideLacrosse.com that stood out to me most this week was the first photos of Michael Sowers in a Duke piece of apparel, a Duke helmet. If I am not mistaken, he's wearing number 23, and it's exciting to see. It's exciting to see, not only because it takes a big story and it makes it more real, but it's also exciting to see because, by virtue of making it more real, now I, at least, start to have more concrete imagination around what it's going to be like. So for me, that was the coolest thing, as Michael Sowers checked in as the number one player on our top 50 players of 2021 countdown.
Yeah, mine is something that maybe you haven't seen, and that's just we transferred another issue of the magazine this basically earlier today. If you're listening, I'm not sure what day you're listening to this. If it's Friday, then we transferred it on Thursday morning. So it's been interesting, and, you know, we could do a whole podcast about the fact that we're doing all of our magazines basically from multiple different states, doing it remotely. We are you know, having to come up with creative solutions for some stuff that we don't have access to that normally we would in our archives. And, you know, we've put out, what is it now, 8 or 9 issues without there being any college lacrosse actual games, like, featured.
Yeah, that's a record in them, for sure.
So it's interesting. You know, Syracuse men's and women's lacrosse programs are going to be on this next cover. I'm really excited about it. It's one of my favorite that we've done in the past in this kind of stretch here. I've liked some of the other covers. Really, I like the one that we did right when the season was shut down. I really like that cover. But I think front to back, this one is one of my favorites in the stretch here. So I'm really excited and proud about that.
Awesome. Well, not to immediately turn your attention forward, but when you look ahead to next week, what are some of the things that are coming down the pipeline that have you excited about what we're working on?
Can I give myself a plug here?
Well, yeah, because that means that you're going to hold yourself accountable in terms of actually getting it finished.
That will drop on the site next week about a college lacrosse player who, this will also be in this issue of the magazine, a Hamden City player, Mike Dom, and his service to our country, serving in Afghanistan, and now he is playing lacrosse at Hamden City, and he's just got a great story and a great outlook on life, and there was so many quotes that aren't even used in the story that just kind of stop you in your tracks, and either you start just laughing or really thinking. He was just a great person to talk to, so I'm really excited about that.
And as someone who edited it, I will let everybody know that you really undersold the story by saying that you weren't pleased with how it had come together. But I would agree with you that some of those comments that he shared and some of the anecdotes and some of the perspective certainly made it a worthwhile read. So I would second that, as well as another thing that I'm excited about is the holiday gear guide that Kyle Devitt has been working on. I am a terrible shopper. I always buy my Christmas presents at the 11th hour. And partly that's because every year what happens, my wife's birthday is in December, so I get focused on that. And then I give her a birthday present, have this sense of relief if she likes it, and then immediately get hit with this crush of, oh no, now it's time to buy Christmas presents, whereas I probably should just, you know, do what normal people do. And if not Black Friday, Cyber Monday, then shortly thereafter get at least lists going and start crossing items off the list. But with all of the attention being paid to the slowness of delivery and pretty much the fact that if you're listening to this now, it sounds like you might not be able to get Amazon delivery by Christmas time. Hopefully the U.S. Postal Service, UPS, will be able to facilitate the delivery of lacrosse goods from your favorite lacrosse e-commerce retailer. So we will have that available. And if you're listening to this podcast, almost certainly you have someone in your life that wants something lacrosse related for Christmas, and Kyle Devitt will be able to give you an idea of what exactly you should look at purchasing.
You're making me feel a lot better about myself. had Kelsey's gift for a while.
Well, I know that you got Alan's gift in like September or October, because I think I was on the phone with you when the delivery guy dropped it off, and unfortunately it had a photo of what you had gotten him on the box, and you needed to go like steal it from the front step before he saw it. So yeah, that made me feel horrible about my normal timelines for buying gifts.
Well, I don't think he's listening to this, so I can share that I got him a bike, and I was just, because it was like one of those things that during like the when people were really quarantined was just flying off the shelves, and I was just really scared about like they're just like, you know, you're not able to get a bike delivered by Christmas. That would have just been crushing. But there's some Hot Wheels thing that my parents got him that like he's seen commercials for, that's all he talks about. So my gift is going to be dud and my parents are going to be the hero anyway. So
well, if I mean the Liberty Mutual commercial is running right now where the kid is disappointed by the bike and instead he wants his like whatever it is right priced auto insurance, maybe you can just insure those Hot Wheels and it'll be even better. Kind of two birds, one stone situation. Hey, Alan, I'm going to teach for Christmas this year. I got you the lesson of fiscal responsibility.
Yeah, that'll go over real well. Fiscal responsibility. Here, Alan, I put some money in your 529. Merry Christmas.
Oh, man. Well, with that, why don't we go make sure that our shopping, if not gets completed, then certainly takes a step forward. And Matt, as always, appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. For the listeners, thank you for checking us out. If you like what you heard, leave a rating and review. And we'll be back next week with more Inside Lacrosse podcasts.
Inside Lacrosse podcasts, the source of the sport.